Fuck, we're coming over here. Ms. Goffman?
Yes, thank you, sir.
Do you have your legal submissions on the file in the house?
Thank you.
And we've been through them, but if you want to take us through them, that's fine.
Okay, and it's probably just, if you've been through them, it's probably just the section on the relationship between the debtor and Rules for SMAs. There's a few points, so probably in addition to what I've set out here that I'd like to make, if that's okay.
Yes.
So the only reason I guess we've got this issue is because of the exemption for utilities from the SMA rules. And so it's a bit of an anomaly that Transpower will need to consent when other utilities operators that aren't necessarily nationally significant don't require consent under the rules. So I guess the key message is Transpower's not looking to subvert the NACEDA. It's only because of what's already in the plan that this is an issue that we're looking to get, I guess, comparable treatment in relation to. So the National Grid passes through SNA F40A in the Gibston Character Zone, and Transpower would require resource consent because Regulation 32B in the CETA, which relates to permitted activities, provides that any tree or vegetation must not be trimmed, felled, or removed if it is in a natural area. And that's defined as an area that is protected by a rule because it has outstanding natural features or landscapes, significant indigenous vegetation, or significant habitats of indigenous fauna. Now, I've got copies of the regulations here if you'd like them before you to step through this. I've probably set out the key provisions and the submissions, but I do have those here if you wish at any point.
I think one copy of the regulations would probably be helpful. I don't know if
trimming, felling, or removal of any tree or vegetation in a natural area is a controlled activity if it is done to reduce the risk to an existing transmission line and all applicable conditions are complied with. Otherwise, any application will be assessed as a restricted discretionary activity. So to overcome this issue, Ms. Corr has identified that one option is to provide a permitted activity rule for any trimming, felling, or removal of any tree or indigenous vegetation, including in an SNA, if it relates to the operation, upgrade, and maintenance of the national grid. We submit this approach has been adopted elsewhere and is not unusual. And the example I've attached in Appendix A to the submissions is from the South Waikato District Plan. It has been subsequently raised with me that that rule refers to, so that's 14.4.1CX refers to electricity lines and doesn't actually clarify that it's transmission. I have looked at the definitions under the district plan, that district plan, and somewhat unhelpfully the definition is electricity transmission and distribution lines. So the rule in their plan doesn't actually align with the definition, but I think it's quite clear that the reference to electricity lines encompasses both distribution and transmission. So that's just to note that point.
Just stepping back up, a wee bit, just looking at clause 30 in the regulations. Subsection or subclause 2 says any tree or vegetation must not be trimmed, felled, or removed if it is in a natural area. It seems to me that irrespective of what the district plan laws say, that permitted activity can't apply anyway. Am I reading that wrong?
I understand how you're reading it, but the peculiarity here is that in this context, it's the rule, the definition of natural areas. So if you turn to that, that's page 6 of the regulation. It actually cross-references back to the plan. So when we're talking about indigenous vegetation, the natural areas, the CETA defers to what's in the plan.
Sorry, I'm missing the link between the...
Do you need a copy of these as well?
Possibly.
But there are some there. Well, I know I'm being pedantic.
No,
lawyers are supposed to, and I'm not a lawyer, but I'll be pedantic as lawyers are. The definition of natural area just says that it's an area protected by a law, but for those purposes, that doesn't, even if there was a rule making it permitted for transpower, it would still be a natural area in terms of the definition because there are rules protecting that area, just not against the actions of transpower.
I see what you're saying there. Yeah, I guess how it's been interpreted is if there is a permitted activity rule or any rule that's specific to transpower or the national grid, then this definition doesn't apply.
Has that been interpreted by the courts or
not that I'm
by
aware
the councils of that transpower have submitted on?
Yeah, I'm not aware that the issue has been before the courts.
It seems a bit anomalous, doesn't it? That it says it's a natural area, but it ceases to be a natural area if you make an exemption for transpower, but it's still a natural area because it has other rules protecting it. Well, and I would have thought if it was intended, given that there be some sort of exemption specifically for transpower, that would have been written into clause 30. Rather than some way of reading the definition of natural area. And I understand the problem you have, because it was probably drafted by NFE.
If I could put a counter argument forward, is what I don't think it's chancery draftsmanship, but perhaps the intention was, if we look at it at a high level, the NSETA is what's determining activity status, not plans. But plans determine whether something is a natural area or whether this framework is to apply to it. And I think the reason that it's done that is it's obviously envisaging in some districts there will be a more stringent activity status for clearance within SNAs. And so then the NSETA kicks in terms of setting the activity status, which the most stringent it can be under NSETA is restricted discretionary activity. So in the context of another district, for example, if you had a non-complying activity status, the NSETA kicks in to make it restricted discretionary. But then conversely, because they've linked the definition of natural area to something protected by a rule, if other districts choose to adopt a more permissive approach, then I think you get the benefit of that by virtue of the reference to protected by a rule, because if they'd meant just identified on the planning maps, I think they would have said that. And equally, if they said, if they just meant any rule, I think they wouldn't have said protected by a rule. It would have just said subject to a rule.
I think the sensible way forward for us might be we might get our own opinion on that as well, just so that we're not...
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. I think that's probably the best solution. So, you Bill.
Because I'm trying to get past how it would appear that this legally would be a higher order standing document regulation-wise than what the district plan is. Is that how it works legally?
So
this is a higher order statutory document than what the district plan is. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, obviously these sections in the RMA that talk about the relationship between national environmental standards and district plans, and in the case of the NECEDA, as we can see, there's a cross-reference back into the district plan framework, so it's not as simple to say as one. There's still that interrelationship, I guess, but in terms, if you're referring to the district plan can't be more lenient than the rules in the NECEDA.
I mean, if we took the fact aside that the district plan has permitted activity status for utilities, and that rule wasn't there, then it would appear that this referencing back to the ECA rule to say that, and here it would be that it's going to be a controlled activity, that this trumps whatever the
district
plan says.
Yeah.
And so it seems that this unfortunately reinforces, seems to me, the problem.
Well, I think it comes back to what rules are in the district plan and what rules, particularly though, what areas are protected by rules in the district plan, because it all hinges on that definition of natural area.
Mm.
But the only reason I guess that this has come up as an issue for Transpower is because of that exemption for utilities, where if you come down to the real world, the effects that the grid is going to have are going to be comparable to utilities. And so it doesn't make sense to provide an exemption for one and not the other. And I think there is a way around it by virtue of a permitted activity rule.
But the definition of the role that you're referring to in the plan about the exemption for utilities, what's the definition for utilities?
Is the district plan just on that table? PDP, Pivotal Development Plan?
I should warn you, Ms. Garden, that we raised a number of questions with the drafting of these rules, and we're not sure that they're clear as they are anyway, so I wouldn't treat them as the perfect version to be submitting on, if you like.
Sure, okay, thank you, sir.
Doesn't the fifth bullet point say transformers, lines, necessary incidental structures, equipment for the transmissions and distribution of electricity? So aren't you within that block anyway?
The issue is the exemption is currently in the plan, is not a rule.
That's one of the things that we've raised.
Okay.
Whether that actually is a rule, and if it is a rule, then you probably, if your interpretation of the definition of natural area and the regulations is correct, then you're probably exempt anyway, aren't you? Mm.
Yes. If the exemption becomes a rule,
yes,
then Transpower and the grid are covered and captured,
yeah,
I think, on that interpretation. Because there won't be a rule protecting that area for the purposes of utilities or the grid. But as it stands, that exemption is sitting there as a statement.
If we put it to you this way, in law, if you have a rule and you have an exemption, supposed exemption from it, should the exemption also be a rule or not?
In my view, it should be a rule.
Mm.
And that's why this issue has come up for Transpower.
Okay.
Not to prolong That's an issue too much, but I
think... Well, I think that's actually quite simple if you think in those terms.
Yeah. So if exemption becomes a rule, the issue for transfer goes away. I will just flag another issue that has been raised with me by council to council, and that's just in regards to the permitted activity rule. We suggested whether that is inconsistent with section 43.3b of the RMA, which relates to you can't have a rule in a plan that is more lenient than a national environmental standard. But again, we do not think that, so if I just turn to the section, sorry one moment. So for the purposes of that section, a rule or a resource consent is more lenient than a standard if it permits or authorises an activity that the standard prohibits or restricts. So again, though, we would argue that the NACEDA itself isn't what's prohibiting or restricting something in the context of Indigenous vegetation clearance. It goes back to the plan, again, because of the definition of natural area. And that can be contrasted with other activities in the NACEDA, which directly restrict or prohibit, well, they don't prohibit, but they expressly restrict activities without reference back to the district plan. Whereas in the case of Indigenous vegetation, we've got this interrelationship back with the plan. So it's actually the plan that drives the framework for Indigenous vegetation clearance in the context of the national grid, not the NACEDA itself. And that's why we don't feel we fulfill that section 43B of the RMA.
And you've got the same problem for historic heritage because that refers back to protected by a rule as well. I just wondered if there are other provisions within the definitions that refer back to a plan, the same situation applies.
We'd have to look at that as we come up, as you're meaning in terms of different topics within the plan.
Yes, or just different definitions within here where the same issue may arise throughout the rest of this plan or any others that you're probably looking at as well.
Yes, we'll look at that. I think here, though, we're dealing with the section on Indigenous vegetation, so these are the clear rules under NACEDA for that.
Maybe your own NPS and environmental standards don't always work as everyone thought they might. Conclusion I'd probably come to. Be careful what you ask for, isn't that right?
So if you do decide to include a permitted activity rule, whether that's specific to the grid or whether it's bringing that exemption up into a rule, that would also facilitate the routine and emergency vegetation management, which is described in Mr. Renton's evidence. I also note the proposed rule would not apply to any new national grid infrastructure, which would be subject to consenting requirements under the plan, because NACEDA only relates to existing lines. So in conclusion, Ms. Kaur has accepted the majority of amendments proposed in the Section 42A report. Some further amendments are recommended to provide greater clarity, including in relation to the role of offsetting, and to address an anomaly regarding the status of TransPower's activities within the SNAs. TransPower will be calling evidence from Mr. Andrew Renton here today in relation to engineering matters, and Ms. Kaur in relation to planning.
Ask you to, and or anybody that can ask, does it only apply to SNAs when it refers to natural areas in that definition? It's just because in chapter 33 regarding indigenous vegetation. There's a threatened species list on there as well, and so you can't go, as I understand the rules, you're not able to just go and cut those down that'll trigger a consent, even though it's not an ECNA. Does that fall within the definition of natural area? Because I suppose it's whether they fall under the trigger at significant indigenous vegetation. Sorry, I've only just thought of that, so it's
I guess as you identify it, whether it comes within that definition. I'm not sure. I'll just check with Ms. Corwin.
Yeah,
that's an issue she's turned her mind to.
Ms. Corwin might want to do that, well, and then we maybe start with someone else, give it a bit more time.
Could I perhaps assist you by pointing to the use of the word area in the definition?
Could be a very small area. An extremely small area.
So you're talking about section 33.7 of the plan?
Section 33.
Or the present plan.
Yes, I think Commissioner Sinclair is referring to the definition of natural area and regulations.
Yep.
And then whether that's related to 33 in terms of
the general indigenous
clearance. I think. It's not the clearance of a plant identified as a threatened species listed in 33.7.
My understanding is that that's the standard of the committed activity rules. So if there was a committed activity rule, it would still trump the underlying standards.
Okay.
And I think the point Mr. Chairperson was making is that perhaps that this refers to an area where it's this. The list in section 33.7 is just a list of species which arguably aren't what the legislature is intending by reference to area here.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have any further questions in relation to the legal submissions?
No, thank you.
I could ask Mr. Remington to provide a summary of his evidence.
Well, so you can relax your brain from all the taxing legal stuff, I'll keep you to the short parts of physics and engineering.
Nice photos too.
Yeah, which can be simplified to, if a tree grows up close enough to the line that it flashes over, the power goes off, and if the tree is planted at this close to a line, and it grows taller than the distance it is away from the line, and it falls over in a storm, the lights go out again. I think those are the two key ones. So, and the two photos kind of show the first one, if trees get too close to a line, they're growing close to it, either up the side or underneath it.
they will arc over to it, and a fire will ensue, power will go out, damage is done, and the picture is part of 4.9 is where it's running through a forestry block, it just happens to be a forestry block, it's a block of trees really, where they, the trees too tall, they go over and install and they pull the light down and the lights go out. So that's the two practical examples. What does Transpower do about it? Well, we control the lines every year. We spend about $10 million a year cutting trees and managing vegetation and looking at about 30,000 landowners who we have to get access with to be able to get on and do the tree trimming and management. So it is a big issue, and it's something that we need to make sure we get on and do from a worker and public safety point of view, from a system protection point of view. It's one of those items that just has to be done and managed. There is no real way around it. Either the tree goes or the line, you know, turns power off. There is nothing in between. It's really like a high level summary from the engineering point of view, very straightforward. But if you'd like to know more, let us know. But it's roughly a $10 million a year exercise to manage the trees, and it's an annual inspection. We use helicopter LiDAR survey once every 12 years, and because technology gets cheaper and better, we're moving that to a trial of every 3 years so that we can survey exactly where the trees are. So we can sit down with landowners and say, that tree's not going to broach this year, but it might broach in 5 years' time. So if we're coming on to deal with these two trees, can we deal with these other four at the same time? Less disturbance for the landowner, it's obviously cheaper and easier for us and manages the risk account. So there's a lot of ongoing work in that space, but I'm quite happy to take any particular questions. We have a project working with the New Zealand Forest Owners Association at the moment to manage everybody's expectations about what each party will do and what the tree fall distance is and what the height is. And we're getting to a point of complicating things instead of just a simple line on a page that try and allow them to grow trees underneath the line, like where it crosses over a large valley. So it's not a sterile area. So if the valley is like 50 metres deep, they can quite easily grow a harvest of a tree 35 metres underneath it and not cause an issue. So we're trying to help them maximise their profitability while we're minimising our risk, but it's obviously a partnership that goes on. But any types of questions?
Are there any areas in New Zealand where you have to do this with this plan or whichever? If say the rules stayed as they were and you were required to do it, is that the case anywhere else where you have to go and survey the
haven't come across
can the colleges through and work out what the tree type is before you go and chop it down?
No, haven't come across it yet. The places where there are known native species habitat. Normally up around Northland, but that's because there might be some other indigenous species issues.
What about where you go through Tongariro National Park?
Yeah. We have issues for making sure we manage, when people go on to vegetation management, making sure that there's the archaeological act that applies to us as well, to make sure that we don't openly disturb the ground and things, so that you can't get too vigorous with trying to grub out roots in case you disturb historic rock or geological formations. And there are places where there's natural endemic species that you're trying to manage up through Rock and Pillar Range and that part up through Lindis, and you can talk about sphinx and stuff, but that's more about access controls and things.
Thank you.
Any questions?
To read, so about half a page. So as Ms. Garvin said, a lot of my evidence supports a significant amount of agreement with the conclusions reached in Section 42A reports. This agreement is primarily on the basis that the relief of voting power in relation to Chapter 3 strategic direction is adopted by the panel, either by the revised relief sought by Transpower or the amendments included in Council's right of reply, which included a new goal, objective and policy in relation to infrastructure. I wish to briefly address some further amendments to Chapters 23 and 33 that are supported by my evidence. Firstly, in terms of Chapter 23, Objective 23.2.1, I have supported replacing the word inappropriate with other activities to ensure that nationally significant infrastructure, such as the national grid, is anticipated within the Gippsland character zone. Upon reflection, I do not consider that the proposed amendment achieves the relief sought by Transpower, nor is necessary to make amendments to do so. Subject to Council's recommended amendments to Policy 23.2.1.7, together with either Transpower's preferred relief or Council's further amendments to Chapter 3. In terms of Chapter 33, Indigenous Vegetation and Biodiversity, particularly the offsetting policy of Policy 33.2.1.8, the amendments I seek in my evidence aim to better reflect that offsetting is not a requirement under the RMA, and mandating offsetting in the district plan such that it is required is not appropriate. I accept that this policy may benefit from further refinement to further clarify the role offsetting may play and to better align with Policy 3.5.2 of the proposed RPS. My aim is to better express the concept that the onus should be on the applicant to consider offsetting rather than the onus of council decision makers to consider whether the applicant has considered offsetting. I acknowledge that this is a subtle difference, but I consider that the policy can be directive in encouraging applicants to consider offsetting, a policy which council can then use when assessing a resource consent application. On reflection, perhaps the words "the applicant may consider offsetting" may be more directive and clear. In terms of Policy 33.2.2.1, my evidence seeks that the policy be amended to include the words "remedy or mitigate" along with the void in terms of the clearance of Indigenous vegetation within significant natural areas. It is my opinion that as currently worded, the policy does not give effect to the MPS, particularly Policy 5, which says that decision makers must enable the reasonable operational maintenance and minor upgrade requirements of established electricity transmission assets when considering the environmental effects of transmission activities. Another alternative may be to provide a specific national grid policy, which would give effect to Policy 5. It's currently worded, the policy would not allow the clearance of Indigenous vegetation within significant natural areas if it reduces Indigenous biodiversity values. Clearly, there will be situations where Transpower will be required to trim or remove vegetation, and for instance, SNA F40A in the Gippsland character zone to meet its obligations under the Electricity Hazards from Trees Regulations 2003. Lastly, I was going to explain the relief sought in relation to the Indigenous vegetation clearance rules and their relationship with the NS, but I think that's already been covered off sufficiently by Ms. Garvin, so I won't go into detail about that. I'm happy to take any questions.
In terms of the summary, that's just a summary of your evidence and nothing's, you haven't changed anything compared to what's in your summary?
I do have copies to
okay.
So it's just that Objective 23.2.1, I no longer think that
right.
The relief is...
Okay, if we can have copies of that,
yep,
that'd be...
Yeah, I've got them.
In terms of the... Policy 33215. see. If I understand correctly, you see that that needs, it needs to be amended to provide for the national group?
Is that policy 33.215?
Policy here. What I'm trying to do is match that to the objective.
So originally in Transpower submission, Transpower sought that it did acknowledge the national grid, but
right.
I think I agree with the recommendation of the Section 42A report that the policy doesn't have to specify every activity that may be located there, and it doesn't prevent other activities from being there.
Okay. And lastly, just policy 33218 on paragraph 61 of your evidence. This is the biodiversity offset policy. As a planner, do you have a view on the use of terms such as preferably within the policy? Use of the term preferably? Is that good planning practice?
Whereabouts would you insert it in the policy?
So it's already in there on the bottom line of your page. It's in there already. So I'm just asking, so, and preferably a net gain. Is it good practice for policies to use terms as such as preferably? In whose term would the preference relate to?
I personally don't like the word preferably within the policy, because I think as you're alluding to, whose preference would it be? Council or that?
Okay, thank you.
So I don't have any questions either, thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the case of Transpower for this topic.
If we do decide we need to get a legal interpretation, we'll make a copy available. At a minimum, it will go on the website, but I'd probably delete the copy and send to it.
Thank you very much. Okay,
the hearing.
Drawn out of it, good.